Before we get started, we just wanted to call out that the midterm elections are fast approaching Tuesday, November 8th. We hope you're ready to get out there and vote. The midterms may not seem vital, but this is really where we can change the game in Congress, which influences the majority of legislation in our country. Our BBs, we're counting on you. Get out there and make your voting plan today at vote.gov.
Welcome to Le Bush, Le Bebes.
Yeah, Rox, how you doing? It's been a while, actually. I miss you.
It's actually been a while. I really miss you, too. This is our first bi-coastal episode. We're bi-coastal biatches.
I know. I mean, it's awesome, but also sad, because I feel like it's great when we're getting ready together and...
I know. It's a different vibe. Know. It's different, like, recording from across the country.
Yeah.
Let's get into our episode. This is a fun one. I feel like from when we first put together our episode guide, this was one that has stuck out to me as being just kind of interesting into diving into the term slut and the nuances of it. And we're also going to be talking to an incredible guest today. So she is a sex worker. She is an entrepreneur. She is an incredible human being. And we're going to be hearing more about her businesses, her story, and getting into all the nuances of working sex with Melrose Michaels later in this episode. But we wanted to go through kind of like the history of the term. You know, we love a good history moment here on Bush Babies.
We are all about it. And I told my mom and I showed her our logo and she was like, that's such an old school. And I was like, we're doing a history podcast. Hello.
We love a little history moment. Hello. We need a nod to the ages.
Yeah.
So I thought a nice place to start off, I'm sure most of us listening know, you know, what we are referring to when we use the term slut, but I thought it'd be nice to just give a range of definitions. So according to the Oxford Languages Dictionary, the word slut is defined as a woman who has many casual sex partners.
Yeah.
Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines slut as disparaging and offensive, a promiscuous person, someone who has many sexual partners, usually used of a woman.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, it's shocking that these very established dictionaries and English language tools are physically saying and like putting this on a specific gender, putting this on a very derogatory term. It literally says disparaging and offensive, a promiscuous person in the Merriam-Webster dictionary, which I just found surprising because I don't know if I've ever seen a definition that comes with derogatory adjectives associated with it. But I also read a really cool article titled Good Girls, Gender, Social Class, and Slut Discourse on Campus, published in Social Psychology Quarterly, Volume 77 of the American Sociological Association, which cited Urban Dictionary. And they cited Urban Dictionary, a website documenting youth slang, refers those interested in the term slut to whore, bitch, skank, hoe, cunt, prostitute, tramp, hooker, easy, or slug, which I just thought was interesting ways to have like the actual official definitions of this word be depicted online with these illicit definitions and kind of showing apparent the misogynistic connotations.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the purpose of Oxford and Merriam-Webster dictionaries are to represent the societal official definition of what a term means. And so the term officially does account and include that derogatory note ingrained with the word. Like even historically when the term was first recorded in a book, it has reference, and as it like shifted over time to focus on mainly women, it dealt with someone who was, you know, a woman that slept around and being almost untidy linked to that definition, if that makes sense. Mm. So
it was like a messy, dirty vibe.
Messy girl, sleeps around, you know, that's what the connotation was. And so I think that's just what they're trying to, I don't know, represent in the dictionary definition. But it is sad to see that there are terms out there that do have derogatory connotations associated with them. The first time slut was actually used was in 1386, referencing a man, actually, in Geoffrey Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales novel. And it was referring to a man's untidy appearance. So that's the first recorded use of it. Once the 1400s hit, the Middle English phrase slut was used to describe an untidy, dirty woman, which then started to shift into deriving connotations of sexually promiscuous and untidy combined, which resulted into what the term slut means today. So it's not that old of a word, at least from like written sense. Like, this could have been a slang term that was used in spaces, but we didn't find it documented until the late 1300s. And even that, there isn't finalized evidence of that being the very first time, like, when I was looking into it. So, yeah.
What I find interesting is, based on the first recorded use of the word, in 20 years, this word, which was in the first recorded use, referring to a man, in 20 years, less than, it turned into only a woman's word. What the hell is that? Like, actually, what the fuck? Like, if this means untidy, if this means dirty, even if it's referring to sexualized situations, both men and women can be sluts or sluts or whatever you want to call it, in a sense. But why is it that even in Oxford Languages Dictionary, why is it even in Merriam-Webster's Dictionary, it literally says, usually of a woman who has many casual sex partners? I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of an interesting thought process around it.
Yeah.
Not that I have the answer to it, but it's just interesting.
Yeah, and I think with some of that, it could be because of lack of concrete evidence of what things were used in common language back then. Because maybe it was always used to refer to women, and this was the first time it was seen in any book that we found, and it happened to be referred to a man. Or maybe it was referring to both and shifted over time. And I think that's one of those things with slang and less official words and language, is it's sometimes hard to find the concrete evidence of how things shifted over time. But it is an interesting anecdote for sure.
So, as I mentioned before, one of the research papers I referenced and studied during this prep was called Good Girls, Gender, Social Class, and Slut Discourse on Campus. And we're going to leave all the citations down below, any references, if you guys want to check out any of these research papers. Mm-hmm. But the paper referenced above stated, women's participation in slut shaming is often viewed as evidence of internalized oppression. Ringrose and Reynolds, 2012. This argument proceeds as follows. Slut shaming is based on sexual double standards established and upheld by men to women's disadvantage. Although young men are expected to desire and pursue sex regardless of relational or emotional context, young women are permitted sexual activity only when in committed relationships and in love. Which basically concludes that slut shaming is thus about sexual inequality and reinforces male dominance and female subordination in a way that's non-consensual, essentially. Growing up, I just kind of went with it, and I was like, oh, okay, like, that, this is what our friends call us, this is what this calls us, this is just what we hear in media, it's totally an acceptable word. And now that I've, I guess, done some digging, I'm a little ashamed even of my own use of the word, because it is a derogatory word, and I don't think it's a word that can be thrown around lightly.
Everyone is taking certain things a bit more seriously. If you want to use them in the actual serious way, then yeah, definitely not very okay anymore. But there's also a movement to reclaim it as well. So I think that's the shift. And that's the same with a lot of words.
Totally.
That's actually a good perspective, because I think a lot of the narrative that's going around right now is that, you know, any use of derogatory terms towards marginalized communities is bullying, is shaming, even if it's not said in a serious manner, because it starts to build this hierarchy in our society where women are putting other women down. So then it makes it okay for men to put women down in these same regards. And that's the thing that I think we want to stray from. But I do love what you're saying about, like, it's what the meaning of the word means to you. And later on, you guys will hear from our guest. We had such a great interview with her, and she talked about her definition of the term slut and, you know, how she plays a role in her career path of, you know, she gets called that all the time, and she gets faced with this word all the time, but she's made it not mean something to her. So I think that is definitely a really good perspective and a good, you know, mindset to have on any word that makes you feel uncomfortable, on any word that makes a community that you care about feel uncomfortable. It's okay to take that definition away and take the power away from that word.
Definitely. For sure. And I mean, we can see that in, like, the slut walk and stuff, where there are a lot of women who are owning it.
Wait, what's the slut walk? I actually don't know about this.
So the slut walk is actually a transnational movement calling for an end to rape culture, including victim blaming, slut shaming, and the slut shaming of sexual assault victims. Participants protest against explaining or accusing rape, and it's kind of like the believe her protest and mentality. And it all began in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, after the Toronto police suggested that women should avoid dressing like sluts in order to avoid getting assaulted. And so now there's a slut walk every single year to stand up for women's rights and to stand up against rape culture.
I read this really interesting article on Time magazine that was published back in 2014 and written by Eliana Doctorman, that studied the correlation between young women, like college age, and social status. Mm-hmm. And research showed that well-off, high-status women were less likely to be slut-shamed than their lower-status peers, despite engaging in more sexual behavior than the low-status women. And what they found is that these college women were actually using the term slut to police class boundaries, to, like, make lower class individuals feel like they can't fit in because they're going to be called a slut, even though they're doing the exact same acts, or even less acts than the people who are in the high status group of women.
Wow.
Which I just thought was a very interesting anecdote. And it's like, it goes along with this fact, not fact, like, I don't want to call it that, but it goes along with this narrative of women putting down women. And, like, it, you know, we'll get into this a little bit more with Melrose and how it correlates with the sex world specifically, but, like, it does suck that it's so normalized to put down fellow women. It sucks that this is something we have to unlearn. It sucks that this isn't something that just that we as human beings, like, want to support each other. And I think we're hopefully coming to a time where, like, this information and having so much at our fingertips and so much to access can allow us to open our minds a little bit and have, you know, conversations to unlearn the qualities that we don't want to have anymore, like we've talked about. So anyways, I just thought that was kind of like a crazy thing. And also, in terms of slut shaming, for anyone out there, slut shaming can refer to a really wide variety of behaviors. We're not just talking about when somebody calls you a slut, like specifically to your face. This can be talking about your clothes in a revealing way or painting you as a provocative person in any way, like I would consider as slut shaming. So that's what I'm referring to here.
Yeah, it's just
judgment,
I think
really.
It goes back to the whole idea that you are saying that it's so easy in this day and age to get competitive against other women. And it does require some unlearning to have to do that. And it all goes back to this idea that, like, we're all competing for male attention. And at the end of the day, you know, or male attention and or respect. And so at the end of the day, there is an unlimited amount of that that can exist in the world. We don't have to feel pitted against each other in order to gain respect in a community, or we shouldn't feel like that. And so it does require this unlearning as we grow older to, instead of feel threatened by another successful woman, be in support.
Absolutely. And that honestly, like you were saying, goes back to this competitive nature. But at the end of the day, we are a community. We are a community that should be supporting each other and want to be supporting each other. And putting other women down, or putting any human being down for that matter, only creates more animosity, which doesn't bring you to inner peace or you to inner happiness. It just creates more conflict internally that continues to separate you from like your inspirations and your aspirations. And if we can shift that mindset and not think about it as competition, but instead think about it as camaraderie, I think that would be so incredible in like this goal of empowering women, you know, and people, humans.
Definitely. I think it's one of those things that goes back to, and I don't want to call you out, Rox, but I feel like you've been talking about this in therapy, is that like comparison is the thief of happiness, or what's the term? Mm-hmm. Is comparison the thief of joy? Because no matter if you're comparing against another woman or like someone else in this world, but there's always going to be someone who's smarter, hotter, richer, more successful, whatever. Yeah. And there's no reason to compare yourself to anyone else and like your journey to anyone else, or else just all you want to do is look at your own journey and know that you're doing the best that you can. Because no one really knows that what everyone else is going through, you know?
No, for sure. And I think it's so easy to look at other people's lives in a comparison sense with like rose-colored glasses and think that like everybody else doesn't have the same obstacles that you're dealing with. And of course, we all have different obstacles, but everybody has obstacles. So if you're only upward comparing yourself, especially to what's depicted on social media or online or even in regular media, because that is not real life. Not like when I am sad, I don't go on my stories purposely and like go like talk about it. But then it started to become this thing where everyone thought I was just happy all the time. So I started to see the perspective, and you have to realize that what people are sharing, like people are not always sharing their downfalls or like their hardships, you know? And so we start to compare ourselves to this perfect life that we think somebody has created, and it's not realistic. And one thing that I've learned in therapy, from my incredible therapist that I literally love so much. I feel like we all have such a great relationship. Like when you find the right therapist, you have such a good relationship because they truly help so much. But one of the things that she's taught me is the art of downward comparison. So instead of always comparing yourself up, think about where you came from. Think about where you were a year ago or a month ago, and like compare yourself to that, because that's actual progress. That's actual growth. That's actually something substantial that you can. If your mind wants to compare like mine does, you can, but in a healthy way. And I think that can help solve a lot of you know, the fallacies of the competitiveness that we see amongst women. And you're right. Like, this is something that I'm really working on. And I think coming from a competitive athletic background has like tainted my mind a little bit to like really feel like everything's a competition and everything's this. But now I'm just, again, in the process of unlearning, and that's okay. I'm doing the best I can right now. That's something you taught me, and that's a good anecdote too.
For sure.
We've used anecdote a lot in today's episode. Anecdote is the word of the day, y'all. Yeah, word of the day.
For sure.
We are very pleased to welcome our next guest, adult content creator and serial entrepreneur, Melrose Michaels, who spends her days running a for sex worker, by sex worker clothing line called Networthy and filling business skill gaps for adult content creators in her business, Sex Work CEO. She also co-hosts an incredible podcast called On the Horizon with Jesse Sage. And she's just an incredible human being. We love her energy, and we're so excited for her to share her story and share a little bit more about working in sex.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on the podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
We're really excited to have you. So we'd want to start out by you introducing yourself a bit more, telling us about your story, and providing your pronouns, just because we love to be inclusive here.
Awesome. Yeah. Pronouns, she, her. And then just, I guess my background started back in 2011. I was like one of those bikini go-go dancers at the nightclubs downtown wearing like the furry boots and like dancing in a swimsuit. And then I had noticed that a lot of the go-go dancers that I was working with started to quit, and I could not for the life of me understand why anyone would quit that job at that time. It was like so much money to me. It was $200 a night, and that was like such a great cash flow.
Yeah.
And so when they started kind of leaving, I was like, well, where are they going? What are they doing that's better than this? And that's why, when I was introduced to webcam modeling, because they were leaving to start webcam modeling. So at that point, that's when I left as well to start webcam modeling. Ultimately, I was doing that at the same time when I was still at my previous job working by day at a bank, and then also going to school and still going dancing for a while. Eventually, I left everything to just do webcam modeling, and that was in 2011. That was my primary, you know, source of income for about 8 years, at which point kind of the community I had built on live streams had started to shift. And that was when I realized people's attention was more towards their cell phones rather than in computer spaces or like sitting in a desktop. And that's when I kind of pivoted to like the premium Snapchat scene. Did that for a few years. That's where I kind of made my name. And then now it's all about the OnlyFans trend and similar platforms to that. So that's kind of where I live at the moment.
It's so incredible how entrepreneurial your mindset is to like really take this passion and such a fun part of your life and turn it into a full blown career. And now to give back to your community in the way that you are is just so inspiring.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I think that, that's like, I don't have this massive following in the regard of like the, you know, the adult creator that's coming from the porn space, who's like gone through the big marketing machine through something like Brazzers or Kink or whatever, you know, company that they have performed for. So for me, I'm coming from a really unique lane in the fact that like I've only self-filmed, self-produced, self-published, self-distributed content, and having that kind of control over my image and my brand is really important to me. So like having to do it differently than the average, you know, porn star or creator has been a unique experience. And I think that is something where I've learned a lot along the way that I can teach other creators, especially in this like post OnlyFans era boom, where there's so many people entering the space that don't have the education or the experience as someone a decade deep doing this already might have. So like, it's really nice to bring that to the table and be able to share it.
Yeah.
We love a woman in control. We love it.
Well, how do you feel about keeping up with, it almost sounds very similar to Roxette's career with social media and how it's constantly changing and there's always a new platform to get on, you know, monetize that space and become as big as you can as early as you can as the site grows. How do you feel keeping up with that? Because it sounds very similar to YouTube, etc.
Yeah, I would, you know, it's funny because we have this saying in the porn space, in the industry, in the creator space, but like adult creators were some of the first to do the things influencers do now. So like my background in webcamming is preemptive of what now a Twitch streamer would be doing. Because like majority of what I'm doing on cam is just building a community, harnessing an audience and entertaining. There would be maybe 10 minutes of that that's actually explicit in any way. So when people think of like the webcam modeling area, they don't realize that was the precursor to the Facebook lives, the YouTube lives, the Twitch streams, all of that. And the same goes for content. Like I was making clips in 2011 where making and posting videos of yourself in like a YouTube space was still very new. So like a lot of things happen in the adult industry before they hit mainstream. VR is another great example of that. So when people are like knocking what sex workers are doing or like the challenges that they face, it's very frustrating because it's the same things that mainstream is going to face, except we're solving those problems for them preemptively and then just being targeted on the back end for it. So it is very similar. The burnout is real. That feeling of like having to constantly create and be creative and be inspired and just to do it like if you do something passionately long enough, it will become work. So like finding that balance is really hard.
I honestly have not thought about it that way. And I love that we're having this conversation because you're so right. Like, influencers are doing things that sex workers have been doing for a long time.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of an interesting take on it, but I totally agree. And coming from the influencer side, I'm like, I feel you, man. Like, I feel everything you're saying right now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's any specific hidden nuances or anything that people wouldn't expect you've come across?
I think the big one that's a standout is we're really undercut as entrepreneurs. So, like, that's what really is valuable that you guys kind of saw that and, like, reached out in that regard. Because people don't understand that the sex work community doesn't have the same avenues of like advertising or marketing that the average, you know, influencer or creator would have, because we're not allowed in so many places. You know, we face a lot of erasure on platforms like Instagram and Twitter, where we're shadow banned or we're deleted, even if we haven't violated terms of service. This is a huge problem in our communities. So where the average, you know, influencer can run Twitter ads to grow their page or can run Facebook advertising, even me with my clothing line, with like some of the clothing, like this is leisure wear, right?
You know,
hoodies, crop tops, nothing crazy, nothing explicit by any means. But the fact that it says nobody's role model, I can't run a Facebook ad to my clothing line because it's associated with me as a sex worker. When you're dealing with the sex industry, these are some of the most innovative marketers and advertisers because we are able to pull traffic to our platforms and monetize it with all of the challenges and all of the obstacles put in front of us. And a lot of people don't understand that nuance.
Yeah.
That if you really want something advertised well, approach a sex worker because they know all the loopholes to make it happen.
Hustlers, baby.
Yeah.
Dude, I feel like that is really one of the things that people misconceive is how long and how much credibility sex workers have. Like, this is an industry that has been around for over 100 years, but has been condemned for so long of that so many people don't really get like the details and the nitty gritty of it. So it's just, perspective is interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, how have you overcome a lot of these obstacles in the past?
So the easiest way, especially with the clothing line, is to really work side by side with other creators. So other adult creators, especially. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, sending out our products, having them advertise on social, despite the shadow ban being very limiting, at least the other creators know where to find them and will see the product and hopefully, you know, end up making a sale. And then on the other flip side of that, as just an adult creator, like we have to be really clever in the way we market on like Reddit or something, for example, or we use TikTok to siphon traffic without being explicit or being adult until we get deleted.
Wow.
So there's just a lot of like game playing. And then also, we also, like, the other flip side of that is, like, when the average, like, influencer, for example, will buy, like, a shout-out on Instagram, that's worth the investment because your Instagram will still be there in 3 years. No. But, like, for us, how do we make that investment knowing every time is a gamble? You know, it's really hard to build a business on, like, a house of cards, and all of us are constantly facing that in our careers.
Well, I know you said that, like, with the shadow banning and stuff, that it can impact your business. Is that a reason why that so many of your businesses, I mean, you have a whole realm of them and some of them are directed towards other people in the sex work community and some aren't. Is that why so many of them are directed towards that community? Because you can be more attuned to knowing where they are and you can more easily advertise directly to them instead of dealing with all the shadow banning and stuff for a wider net?
I think that the fact that most of my businesses are in the realm of like the sex space is more just because it's really part of my identity. Mm-hmm. Like I identify first as an entrepreneur, secondly as a sex worker, and then thirdly as like all the other things, you know, which is probably not the ideal order for my husband, but that's my DNA. So I think that I ended up in this space and building businesses in this space for one as ways to give back to a space that I feel has given me like everything I have, but also because that's where my experience lies. Like I've been doing this for over a decade. I did it way before OnlyFans existed. Mm-hmm. Like I've been able to navigate it at all these different phases when all these different things were booming and be able to stay on top for a longevity that most creators don't see. So I think that with that, I have experience to share, and I want more people to know how to do that and also know how to grow beyond an adult brand, because it's not like, you know, mm-hmm. I have a small following, but like I'm cross diversified into like Twitch and into mainstream things mm-hmm. and launching YouTube channels. So I think that experience that like your career doesn't have to end in sex work. It can also become this other thing, and you can build a brand that is, you know, it has longevity and it's stable in multiple areas. I think that's important to teach. And that's what I hope to do.
Absolutely. And that synchronicity and expanding to the different platforms is genuinely in media your savior. Like, you gotta keep going, gotta keep evolving. And it sounds like we do, as Rachel said, have a kind of a similar storyline and background. So everything you're saying, I'm like, yes, honey, like, tell them. This is why you're the teacher. You're the leader of this. We love it.
I think a lot of creators face all the similar challenges. It just depends on what lane. They're all very similar.
Absolutely. But I just love everything you say and have said about making it happen regardless of the obstacles, basically. You know, you got to follow your passions. You got to make it happen. And like, regardless of the shadow bans, regardless of the obstacles that for sure people will need to tackle, mm-hmm. getting it out there if you're passionate about it is important, and it's doable if you, you know, follow the advice of lovely Melrose. If you have come across any situations that have made you feel uncomfortable at all, and if you feel open to sharing, you know, do you have any advice for sex workers out there who are combating any similar obstacles?
Well, I feel like I've been doing this a long time, right? So I'm a little bit bulletproof or numb, depending how you look at it at this point in my career. But a really good story in terms of like anecdotally is really what launched the clothing line for me for Networthy. So I had this encounter actually in Nashville when I first kind of moved down here. I had friends from Chicago visiting me, and I remember we're at the bar, and you can kind of feel when people's eyes are on you or people are kind of talking about you. So I'm like, okay, they clearly either have an idea who I am or someone in their group does. And it was this group of guys and gals. And then they start passing the phones around, and you're like, okay, they've got my socials pulled up or my porn, one or the other. And eventually, the one girl did not look super happy. The guys were having the time of their life. And then the girl and her friend made their way over to the bar. And I was standing at the bar, and I overheard them say, purposefully, I'm sure, like, it must be so embarrassing knowing everyone in here has seen you naked. And out of just like, again, I've been through this. I've done this 1,000 times. This isn't my first rodeo. And like, the way I turned and replied was like, it's not my fault your boyfriend buys my nudes. Like, that's an issue you guys need to take up with yourself. Like, I don't have a problem with that. And that was actually one of the prompts that started the clothing line. And that's one of our t-shirts is your boyfriend buys my nudes, for the fact that if we could wear this kind of clothing into public spaces, it's already out there for us. We don't need to have this conversation. And it also destigmatizes what the creator is doing. Cause it's like, it's right here. I know what I do. And if you have an issue with that, like, that's for you to take up with you. So that clothing line was like designed to take back public spaces and to feel like armor in these kinds mm-hmm. of situations. And that's why the proceeds also go back to a mental health organization for sex workers. Wow. So that was definitely a standout story in regard to like personal things that have happened. But after long, you just...
Yeah. Okay. Wait, what about like, if you had to estimate like what percentage of uncomfortable situations have been from men versus women when you're in that, because you've just spoken about an experience where it was actually a woman who wasn't happy with you and making you feel uncomfortable, which is really sad to hear, because we should all be supporting each other in any way we can and like not being mean. What do you think?
I just wanted to give you some insight, because I don't know if we've shared this, but like, the theme of our episode is kind of debunking the term slut. Mm-hmm. And when I was doing some research, it literally came out that women cut down other women more often than men cut down women because of social status, which I thought was like kind of a crazy thought. But yes, we would love to hear your experience with it firsthand.
I've definitely, I would say, dealt with more from women than men. I think the reason for that is like, women are, you know, societally structured to be competitive in nature towards each other. We're competing for status, competing for relationships, competing for jobs, competing for all of these things. And that's just a product of like systemic issues, especially in the US. So I definitely feel it more from women than from men. Also, I think that the way society, especially in the US, is structured, the idea of a woman being empowered by her sexuality is so anti what is acceptable right now, especially right now with like things like abortion laws getting overturned in that regard. So anytime you see a woman who's very empowered by her sexuality and isn't like afraid of it or afraid to embrace it, that comes off threatening because that's so not what we're allowed to do. And that is not the status quo. So I think that's a problem in and of itself, but it's definitely, it comes more often from women than from men. In my experience.
It's so sad because the thing about it is like when women cut down other women, all we're doing is putting down women as a whole, which thus empowers men, which just feeds into the system, the system. Like, I get really frustrated when I think about it because it's just, it's sad to me, but
it's one of the questions.
I'm sorry that you've had that experience.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's one of the questions I get often from other creators with the sex work CEO stuff is like, well, if you're giving away all your secrets to success, like, isn't that hurting your business? I'm like, I don't think that when you lift up anyone else, that hurts your business because there's enough audience to go around regardless. And I'm not going to be everyone's cup of tea and you're not going to be everyone's cup of tea either. So like this idea that we're constantly competing, and I like that's taken maturity for me to even understand, you know, like I'm 31 now. So like now it resonates, like I'm not competing for my husband or my work or my whatever. But at a certain age, that was all it felt like. So I think once you can kind of get on the other side of that, and maybe it's like the 30s or something, but you see things more clearly and you don't feel that anymore. So I'm hoping that the work I do can also undo some of that with our in our own space, because there's a lot of things that we do to each other that sets up back all of our movements. And that's definitely a problem in and of itself.
Yeah, I think the best way to describe it in my mind is each person doesn't need a bigger slice of the pie. Like we all want to just make the pie bigger. And so we all get a bigger slice.
Yeah.
And so that is a really big core value of Bush Babies podcast, is empowering the voices of our community and especially people from marginalized communities with a focus on feminist issues and gender identity. So I think it's great that we can support you, learn more about your story, learn more about what your podcast has to offer, and promote that as well on our platform.
Yeah, I love that.
It's so incredible to talk to you and like have just an open conversation about this stuff. And I genuinely feel like your audience and just the world, it's a conversation. These are conversations that need to be had. So yeah, just thank you for being so open and authentic.
Agreed.
How do you feel about the Mia Khalifas of the sex work industry who have come out post their sex work stint or career with regrets?
I think from like, because this happened, this is widely talked about with like Mia for sure, but then also like Lana Rose is another person who had like a really bad experience in sex work or in the porn side. But I think that is a symptom of the times as well. Like, a lot of the way you'd get into porn and the way you'd have to make a career at that time is going through these mainstream studios and being pressured into doing things you didn't want to do. And they were all run by men at that time. And I can understand why that was their experience 100%. And I definitely don't want to say anything to unvalidate that, because that's a lot of people's experience. But I think that with this kind of new age where things are more creator focused, you have so much more control over what your boundaries are and what you can say no to, because it's all yours. You know, if you don't want to film something, if you want to have a completely non-nude OnlyFans, for example, you can do that and you can still make money at it. So I think once things are creator focused, that kind of changes the way in the way you can control your career, your image, what you do and don't want to do. So while I think their experiences are completely valid, I don't know that that is reflective of the current space in time of the industry, if that makes sense. Right now, like you'd see the same thing in like a YouTube kind of conversation where you're like, back in the day, if you were on TV or you had a sitcom, you had a contract, you had to show up, you had to do X, Y, and Z. You maybe had to read lines that 10 years from now you would regret ever saying, and there's nothing you could do about it because you don't even own the material. Versus now in the YouTube space, you're only putting out what you want, what you care about. You can retract it should you need to take it down. You have so much more control in a creator economy, and that is the same in porn. So I think the way things have changed and evolved, like, that's bound to happen. I don't think it is, you know, I have no ill feelings towards their experience because I think a lot of people went through that. I'm just grateful that wasn't the path that I chose, and that I didn't have to go through some of the things that they went through.
And I believe on your Sex Work CEO program, you've talked about this. But obviously, you had mentioned that you don't need to have nudes and, like, start OnlyFans, you can still make money. But there are people who it's pretty clear that if you want to make a lot more money, you should or you might want to explore other options like that. And so I'm wondering how you feel about if there might not be direct pressures, but these underlying pressures of if you want to grow and get to a certain size, you should be doing X, Y, or Z. And if you felt that pressure or how you coach the people that you mentor through that situation.
The pressure really comes from fans. Obviously, fans always want more and more and more of whatever it is. So you really, as a person, need to know who you are, where your integrity is, and where your boundaries lie. And I think boundaries is a conversation that it goes anywhere, because even if you're an influencer on social media, you've got people in your DMs offering you money to do things you would not do. So, like, that isn't exclusive to sex work. And while I think that you need to know your voice and know what your hard no's are, I don't think that money should sway that, because that's your moral compass. That's your character. So no matter what you do, like, if it's going to haunt you, don't do it. That would be my advice. But you don't like this. There's a big misconception that you have to get nude to be successful on OnlyFans. Mm-hmm. The reality is majority of the people on OnlyFans are not adult creators. The data, and you guys might have to double check this, but I remember it being something like 98% of the traffic on OnlyFans is unpaid traffic. So if you think about that, those are people who have never subscribed or spent money on OnlyFans. So there's massive audience there of people who aren't spending money, who are just looky-loos viewing. And those looky-loos who are viewing can't be viewing adult content because they don't have a credit card on file to verify their age. So when you put that in perspective, while adult creators make up a lot of, you know, the OnlyFans press or the OnlyFans stigma, and we did build the platform because we were the ones that it got launched on the backs of, we are not the main community on that platform in present time and space. So to think that you have to do all these other things to be successful there, I just think that's a misconception. I think that what people need to realize is with the premium social media model, like paywalled sites like OnlyFans, really what you're selling is not nudity or explicitness in any way. You're selling access. So that's why someone like a Cardi B or a Bella Thorne can log on and make $1 million in a day, because they're showing you access to their life that you don't otherwise get. So if you think about it in those terms, say you're a musician and you're selling access to backstage content, something no one else is going to see. Or if you're a DJ and you're dropping sets on your OnlyFans, or a comedian or a podcaster, whatever it might be, you're selling access. So if you keep that in mind, I think it really takes the burden off of this adult, you know, stigma and attachment and branding to something like OnlyFans, because at the end of the day, you're just selling access.
Think like an entrepreneur. Yes. Think like a CEO, because you got all the goods, girl. You're like, you're weaving us in and out. I love this, because it is empowering to feel like you have that control, though, honestly. And to feel like you don't have to push yourself past limits that you don't feel comfortable with. I guess to end it off, I'm so sad that we're almost done with our questions, but to end it off, how do you feel about the term slut?
Yeah, no, I think, so words have power when people give them power. Right now, with the way cancel culture is and the way the climate is, and give there are things people should definitely be canceled for. Don't take that out of context. But I think that words have power when you give them power. So, like, if someone wants to slut shame me personally, like, there's that word doesn't hurt me. Like, I'm very comfortable with that word. There's nothing derogatory about it, because I think if a woman wants to have sex, she should have sex. If a woman wants to fuck on camera, she should fuck on camera. I don't have any connotations, but I think it comes down to each their own. Like, the power you give something is the power it has over you. So if you just don't give it power, we all kind of shake off the whore phobia, I think everyone will be better for it.
Everyone needs to check out On the Horizon. It is the most incredible sex workers podcast for sex workers by sex workers. And I learned a lot through just watching, listening to a couple episodes. So I'm definitely going to keep...
We're both subscribers.
I'm a subscriber now, so I'm really excited.
Love that.
So with every guest we bring on for Bush Babies, we do these little hot takes. So if you have a hot take, tell us your hot take. It could be big, small, silly, funny, random. Like Rachel's typical one is the liquid soap, bar soap
of the season
of the century.
Yeah, hot takes. You just say a hot take on life.
I don't think I have anything as comical as that because I wish I did, but I'm a little unprepared. So I think the knowledge or hot take that I would definitely drop, because I was just talking about this, so it's kind of top of mind for me, is that the motivation and inspiration doesn't come before the thing. It comes from doing the thing anyways. So like, do the boring work, do the thing, and then you'll be inspired. Just do it anyways.
Wow. Love it. That is the most inspiring hot take we have ever had Bush Babies in the history.
Great advice.
It's inception.
That's just great advice.
That was
in general.
A good hot take.
Good.
I'm gonna write that on my wall.
Yes, do it anyways.
Cool.
Just do it.
Well, thank you so much, Melrose. You have been incredible and have given so much insight to our audience. And please let our audience know where they can find you.
So all my socials are at Melrose Michaels. Michaels, no apostrophe, nothing like that, with the S. And that's on Instagram, Twitter, and on TikTok. And you could find the educational courses and resources for sex workers on sexworkco.com. And then you can shop our clothing line for sassy leisure wear at shopnetworthy.com.
Thank you so much for watching. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Bush Babies World, as well as our personal accounts at Roxetteresa and at Rachel Traw. And make sure to join our Discord to be an official part of the BB community. Make sure to stay up to date with everything we have going on at www.bushbabiesworld.com.